thank you for inviting me today. It's the first time at SEPS, and it's a great opportunity for me to share with you the findings of our latest report, the Gender Employment Gap Challenges and Solutions, that we presented just a couple of weeks ago at the European Parliament at the FEM committee. So, as it has been highlighted in the previous presentations, providing equal employment opportunities is one of the key targets of Europe in order to face demographic challenges, but also in order to ensure an inclusive and sustainable growth in the future. Yet, it seems that the reality is quite different, and half of the population is still held back. Of course, this has ethical and also political implication, but it also has economic and social cost. And in this report, we try to analyze this a bit more in depth. So the consequences of the gender employment gap, which we define as usual as a difference between the employment rate of men and women, are important, and they highlight the need for policy intervention, as it is as it has been previously mentioned. Of course, it goes without saying that the choice of participating or not into the labor market, it belongs to individual preferences of women, but it's important to ensure at least equal opportunities. The policy context, there have been a lot of measures implemented in the recent years to increase female employment participation in order to meet the Europe 2020 targets of overall 75% employment rate. Just to mention a few of them, it started in 2010 with the strategy for equality between women and men, and the most recent follow-up, the last arrow, the strategic engagement for gender equality, which covers a period starting from 2016, and it will go up to 2019. Then the importance of increasing female labor market participation was reiterated in 2013 within the social investment package, and then again in August 2015 in the roadmap for the initiative A New Start to address the challenges of work-life balance faced by working families, which aimed at modernizing the policy and legal framework in the EU to adapt it to today's labor market and allow especially parents to better balance work-related and family-related commitments. Now, we have seen already some recent data on female labor market participation. So the map on the left-hand side shows the female employment rate in Europe for the population 15 and 64 in 2015, the latest available Eurostat data. We know there is great heterogeneity. We have Italy, Greece, and Malta with very low female employment rate, and instead the highest is Sweden with 74%. Of course, gender gaps in employment also depend on the relative position of men, and particularly since 2008, we've seen that the convergence in employment rate was mainly due to a worsening position of men in the labor market because they were hit by the crisis and the sectors such as construction and manufacturing, they are mainly male-dominated. Still, gender employment gaps are recorded in all member states. This is a 2015 data again, and they range from the lowest value of Lithuania, 1.5%, to the highest of Malta, 25.2%. So behind the 10% differential, there is a reality of almost 7 million women who are not working. And if you think about it, 7 million women correspond to the population of the Netherlands. So we're missing an entire country here. So closing the gender employment gap is both an economic and social objective, both at the individual and at the societal level. At the individual level, because participation to the labor market and to employment allow economic independence and a better control over life and planning your families even. And also at the societal level, because the cost of the gender employment gap is unbearable. So we try to quantify in the report this cost and to estimate how much our societies are losing from the inability of integrating women into the labor market. In order to do this, we use UCITS 2013 data, the latest available at the time when the study was conducted, and you all know that UCITS data is a European Union survey on income and living conditions. so it has very good data for that. And we estimated that the cost of the gender employment gap amount to $324 billion in terms of foregone earnings and unpaid taxes, and to $46 billion in terms of excess of wealth transfer, which sum up to $370 billion, corresponding to almost 2.8% of the European GDP. And in 2013, the GDP of Belgium was around $390 billion. So again, we're talking of like a big amount of resources which are lost here. Now, how did we get to these estimates? Because of lack of time, I don't want to enter technical details, but I want to give you some insights, and then we can further discuss later after the presentation, or you can find all the technical details in the report. But just in a nutshell, our total cost is composed of two different elements. There is a resource cost, which is basically the difference in resource income between working and non-working women. And this corresponds to earnings, losses, unpaid taxes, and missing welfare contribution. Because when a woman is not working in the labor market, she's not earning wages, she's not earning a salary, she's not paying taxes, and she's not paying contributions. At the same time, if you are not working, you also receive public transfer and benefits. And so from the government, from the state perspective, having more women working is a potential saving. So if you sum up these two costs, you have that I just mentioned, I showed you the figure before, you end up with a $370 billion. So for the implementation of this costing framework, as I said earlier, we use USILC 2013 data. And the methodology that we applied is the propensity score matching methodology that most of you may be already familiar with. Because the problem here is that if you simply compare the income of working and non-working women taking a mean difference, you're going to get a biased estimate because you're not considering the participation to the labor market is affected by a set of characteristics, both at the individual and at the household level. And so this has to be taken into account. And with the propensity score matching estimation, we basically compare comparable individuals. So we compare the resource and the public finance income of working and non-working women who have the same probability of being in the labor market given a set of observable characteristics. So we do this for each country and also within different age and educational level, because age and education are the two most important drivers at the individual level of participation to the labor market. And so we end up with estimating 168 propensity score matching models, so 28 countries times three age groups times two education group. So we end up with 168 unit cost of women non-participation into the labor market that then we multiply by the total number of women that would be necessary to reintegrate into the labor market in order to close the gender employment gap. Now, results, again, of course, are very heterogeneous because they reflect the composition of the labor market in different member states. We have Malta, Italy, Greece, Cyprus, and Czech Republic paying the highest bill, and instead Sweden and Lithuania being the most virtuous, with the cost of the gender employment gap as a percentage of the GDP lower than 1.5% in both cases. Now, we also computed an alternative estimate, considering also women's willingness to work, which is, of course, an important factor. And, of course, in this case, the result is a more conservative estimate. And if we only consider of reintegrating into the labor market inactive women who declare that they're actually willing to work, the cost would reduce to $169 billion. Now, this is, of course, a supply-side theoretical estimation, which we think it's informative on the value added that a wider female labor market participation would bring to the economy. But, of course, there are important remarks to be made here. First of all, the labor market do not get growing to accommodate all new entrants, so there might be some displacement effects to be taken into account. The second point is that there are also positive externalities and spiral effects. It has been mentioned earlier on, the possibility of a phenomenon of the marketization of a female labor market, female household worker, home worker, because if they're working, someone has to do it, has to replace them, and most likely it would be another woman. And then third, that of course we are only talking about the quantity, so a reduction of the gender employment gap that does not imply a gender equal condition in the labor market. So we need to make sure that we don't only provide the number of jobs, but also good quality jobs. So that's just one side of the coin, and we need to contextualize our exercise. Now, the presence of a gender employment gap not only has economic implication, but also social effects. And using Eurofound Quality of Life survey data 2013, we analyze the effect of employment participation on a different dimension of well-being and quality of life, because we know that work is the main source of income and a tool against deprivation and poverty, but it also ensures a well-being for the individual and the society. And our result show that women in employment, they evaluate their lives more positively than those not in employment. They feel more empowered because employment provides a network of social support, and they have a higher self-esteem. And also they feel more socially included, with a lower probability of feeling left out of the society. So not only an economic, financial, monetary cost, but there are also some positive social effects here. Now, these results highlight the need for policy interventions, as we said before. And this is why in our study we review some good practices. We selected 18 good practices in Europe in six different member states around four dimensions. Labor market policy measures, namely active labor market policy measures, benefit and taxation systems, childcare support measures, leave policies, so not only maternity leave, but also more in general parental leave and care leave as well, adult care leave, and also flexible working time and work-family reconciliation. Now, very, very briefly, I'm not again entering all the details of the policies because it's a huge amount of data that we gather through interviews and case studies, but just some lessons that we can draw from this systematic review is that in terms of labor market policies, it's fundamental that they are clearly focused so that the target group is clearly defined, especially when they involve financial incentives. And then there has to be an attention as well to the way in which women's decisions interact with the wider family's circumstances. And this is very relevant for taxation policies. We have heard about taxation to the second earner, and this is essential when considering labor market policies. Childcare support, again, we've heard that it is essential in this context, and key success factors are not only the cost of childcare, but also the quality and the compatibility with dominant patterns of working hours. So like in Sweden, you have most of childcare facilities opening at half past six in the morning, until half past six in the evening. So of course, this gives great flexibility. In terms of leave-related measures, flexibility of parental entitlement is essential, not only in terms of the spread of the leave over time, but also the division, how parents share the leave between each other, and of course the combination of generous leave entitlements with also generous income replacement measures, especially to increase male partners' take up of leave entitlements, because that's the main issue there. And also, it's crucial to invest in care leave policies, which would allow women with care responsibilities for not only kids, but also relatives within the family to remain attached to the labor market. And then finally, when it comes to flexible working arrangement and other reconciliation measures, it's flexibility, of course, is valuable. And going back to the matter of attitudes, it's also important that we change a bit the perception of flexibility in the labor market, and that the fact that more women take up part-time work or flexible working arrangement is not associated with lower commitment. So just to sum up, in conclusion, we show that the gender employment gap has a huge economic loss for the society, which corresponds to 370 billion of euro, which is a huge amount of money. Increasing labor force participation is of great importance for Europe, not only for the individual, but also for the society as a whole. And the policies to promote flexible working hours are essential in this context, as well as childcare support facilities and adult care support facilities. So the main message here is not only invest in building bridges, but also invest in people. And if you want to invest in building infrastructure, invest in childcare infrastructure or adult care infrastructure, because these are essential. Of course, ensuring the freedom of choice. Thank you.